On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Hey, welcome to Thursday, a minute past the hour, and I think we've already got a working theme for this evening. We'll be having a conversation here in about 30 minutes with Dr. Carol Scott. She is an author. She is also the head of emergency medicine in the ER department at the military hospital at Fort Belvoir, Virginia. And she has a new book out. The name of the book is Optimal Stress. Optimal Stress. It comes out from Wiley Publishers. It is just now out. It's been out for about 3 days. And she is an expert on the connection between stress and disease, heart attack, stroke. And she teaches about how to turn the negatives that are the stresses in our lives into positives. So with that in mind, I think we will have quite an interesting conversation coming up. Also in the news, of course, the new guidelines. The new guidelines for breast cancer detection, causing no small amount of a furor out there. Recent recommendations to drastically modify mammography screening. Women between the ages of 40 and 49 are supposed to forego screening because it's apparently, at least in terms of the scientific numbers, of no use. And women between the ages of 50 and 74 should have mammograms every other year instead of every year. And there just shouldn't be any breast cancer screening for women older than 74. I have to say that I am of two minds on this. You know that I have a healthy respect for science and for research. But this is not the time, frankly. And I know that there is no such thing as the right time for facts or the right time for reason or the right time for science. It's always the right time for science. But God Almighty, could this have come at a worse time? Because already Senator Tom Coburn is out there howling. Howling is what Tom Coburns do best. About how women who have reconstructive surgery after breast cancer will pay a 5% cosmetic surgery tax. Now, you and I both know that this is untrue. You and I both know that there is a difference between having your B's blown up to double D's and having one side of you or both sides of you reconstructed to look the way they did before the surgery. One is cosmetic. One is not. The radiology industry is highly upset about this. A number of people who have had lives saved or loved ones' lives saved are upset at this. But apparently the numbers indicate that neither breast self-examination nor the annual squishing That's what Agnes calls it, the annual squishing, does much in the way of saving lives. But worst of all out of this is the fact that you know that this is going to give fodder to the death panels, the real death panels, mind you, otherwise known as the boards of directors of the for-profit, avarice-driven healthcare industry. This is going to give them fodder for denying more coverage. And frankly, the information is beyond my real comprehension anyway. If we're not doing regular mammography between the ages of 40 and 50, then how are we detecting it? Is this an admission by medical science that even mammography doesn't really do the job? And frankly, what about women under 40? I understand that the statistics for breast cancer go down under 40, but there are such things as genetic predispositions. And are the rules different for someone who is genetically predisposed for breast cancer? I guess I'm a little bit sensitive to the issue just because of the fact that it touched my life when I was a child. Bless her heart, my mother never let on that anything was untoward, as in, what, 1973? She went in and had a radical mastectomy of her right breast. I think it was her right. And I mean, they carved her all to pieces. They took her breast, they took all the lymph tissue under her arm, they took muscle structure, and then when it was all done, because the treatment at the time was, to say the least, rather barbaric, they irradiated her with merciless doses of cobalt, fried her to a cinder. But my mother was a determined woman, and she was determined that she would live to see me grow up. And she set up her own little exercising machines throughout the house, and wherever she went, she would stop and she would do this little pulley thing to rehabilitate what muscle structure was left on the side that was burned up and carved away. And she survived. It had not reached the lymph system, and she survived. But the fact of the matter is, the right wing is going to start having hissies about this. And we don't need to give the right wing anything more to have hissies about. I don't know if you've seen this or not, but it's just creepy as hell. This comes from the Minneapolis City Pages, you know, the free newspapers. And Hart Vandenberg writes, we mentioned yesterday that Representative Michelle Bachmann's November 5th anti-healthcare reform rally at the U.S. Capitol has turned into the gift that keeps on giving. But today's news moves into the realm of the unreal. A Kentucky woman, remember the census worker who was found denuded, hanged, murdered, lynched, with the word fed scrawled across him? That was Kentucky, too. A Kentucky woman has threatened a Michigan newspaper. She's threatened the Michigan newspaper with a Fort Hood-style bloodbath if they don't quit criticizing Michelle Carbon Dioxide is Natural and Must Be Good for You, Bachmann. Hart Vandenberg says, weird. We always thought Michelle was a pro-life kind of gal, but on with the story, which begins with an editorial in the Port Huron Times Herald, Port Huron being in Michigan, and it lays into Bachmann. It calls her a hate-spewing right-wing legislator from Minnesota, which, curiously enough, is true. the response, I mean, among other things, the crowd there on November 5th, you remember, this is the rally that Fox News and Sean Hannity had to use dummied-up footage to cover up the fact that there were so few people there. At one point in time, the crowd was heard chanting, "Nazi, Nazi, Nazi, Nazi," about Barack Obama. Yeah. Now, this was the rally, of course, that had the giant sign of the bodies stacked like cordwood at Dachau and compared it to Americans being able to go to the doctor when they need to. There was another sign that referred to President Obama as Sambo. Yeah. So anyway, all of this was laid out in the Port Huron Times-Herald. Okay. Well, a Kentucky woman put in, the paper is run by Gannett. It is a Gannett paper. You know Gannett, the folks who bring you USA Today via Big Truck. And according to a story in Editor and Publisher, a woman from Kentucky called Gannett's consumer hotline or whatever. She identified herself as being 60 years old. And the editorial criticized U.S. Representative Candace Miller, who is the Repig-licking congresswoman for Port Huron, and also criticized Michelle Bachmann. And the woman said that she would bring a gun to the newspaper. And this is the quote, "Do what they did at Fort Hood." Do what they did at Fort Hood. This is the continuing story of the eliminationism that runs rampant inside the weird, sick, and twisted right wing. And every time something is proposed that might make America a little bit better, there is another wingnut out there aching to turn some place and some group of innocents, turn the place into an abattoir and the innocents into meat. And as I have said time and time and time again, it's only going to get worse. It's only going to get worse. You know, last night we talked some about the Psalm 109:8 controversy. This stuff is all over the place. Teddy bears, T-shirts, bumper stickers, coffee mugs, mouse pads, you name it. You remember Psalm 109:8, "Let his days be few and let another take his office." And then Psalm 109:9, "Let his children be fatherless and his wife a widow." Psalm 109:10, "Let his children be continually vagabonds and beg. Let them seek their bread also out of their desolate places." Yeah. Well, we have an official horn controversy. And that controversy is this. Some long while back, we set up the Horn Store. In fact, if you go to the chat room, there's a link you can click on for the Horn Store. T-shirts, hats, you know, the usual suspects. All with cute designs. This was through the tireless work of chat room moderator ELO, otherwise known as Sue. Also known as Sue of the Ranting Keyboard. And, you know, it's good. If you want some horn stuff, That's the place to get it. And we go through Cafe Press because it's all easy, easy, easy. Well, the reason that I say we have a horn controversy, and I would like to have your input on this. A lot of those Psalm 109:8 pray for Obama, the Jim Cracks, were for sale at CafePress.com. And a number of them were taken off the site when it became apparent what this was all about. Cafe Press did the right thing and pulled them. Well, I mean, there are all kinds of different T-shirts. Let's see if they got thong underwear with it. No. Polo shirts, long sleeve T-shirts, ball caps, knapsacks, teddy bears, buttons, aprons, thermal coffee mugs, beer steins. No thong underwear. Doggone it. Then again, they're fundamentalists. And this stuff was pulled, as it rightly should have been. Well, now here's the problem. Here's where the controversy and the dilemma comes in. Margene H, what, we don't know, was contacted by Think Progress, and Margene H said that, While they initially took down some of the Pray for Obama items earlier today, now they're putting them back up. This is what Margene H. said. We initially pulled the Psalm 109:8 content from our products today because broader media dialogue indicated that these designs potentially suggested violence toward the president. Based on current public discourse and further review of the actual content, we have determined that it is fair political commentary, and we are in the process of reinstating this merchandise. As with all of our content, these designs will continue to be reviewed, and if at any time their meaning is construed as advocating violence, we will revisit our decision. How do you have to revisit? Let his days be few, and let another take his office. Let his children be fatherless, and his wife a widow. Let his children be continually vagabonds and beg. Let them seek their bread also out of their desolate places. How is it that you have to revisit that to determine whether or not it is an advocacy of violence? Apparently, Margene H. does not understand fundamentalist code. Because you know what happens, even if you're curious. You see Psalm 109:8, and you grab your ballpoint pen, and you write it down on the palm of your hand, because you never have any paper when you need paper. And it's Psalm 109:8. And you go home, and you get on your computer, and you look up Psalm 109:8, and lo and behold, there's the whole stinking psalm. And you read, let his days be few, and let another take his office, let his children be fatherless, and his wife a widow. There's really no way that Sasha and Malia wind up fatherless and Michelle winds up a widow outside of some act of violence, unless, of course, the invisible juvenile delinquent with the white hair, the robes, and the beard in the sky really does smite him with a lightning bolt. And remember, of course, we're talking about the right wing who has been notorious for trying to pray down death and damnation on people they don't like. If you'll recall, I believe it was Pat Robertson who urged his weird brain-dead followers to pray for Supreme Court, the liberals on the Supreme Court, to be killed by God. I am kind of proud that we got to this. Rachel Maddow had it night before last, but we had it last night. And it was on this program that I explained the nature of imprecatory prayer. And lo and behold, here it is in the Think Progress article. an expert from BeliefNet, one Diana Butler Bass, who explains that Psalm 109 is one of the imprecatory prayers, what she calls a lament in the form of petition to destroy one's enemies. She said that the psalm, as it is used by the right-wingers, clearly entreats God to destroy the president. She goes on and she says, it is the personal prayer of an individual, someone who has been dealt an injustice by another, and usually more powerful person. The words of Psalm 109 are those of deep agony, the longings of a victim for retribution and justice. This psalm is considered one of the most difficult of all the psalms, full of violent images of vengeance and death. Thanks, Diana. We got there first. Yeah. But honestly, if the folks at Cafe Press cannot read this and do not have enough of an understanding of the nature of eliminationist fundamentalism to realize that this is an advocacy toward violence, I put the question to you, because you are the ones who would be buying this stuff anyway. And yes, a portion of the proceeds does go to help the horn. But I put the question to you. Should the horn continue to have its Cafe Press store, or should we try to find some other means? And I'll be interested to hear your thoughts on the issue. I know where my thoughts lie. It feels in my heart like I can't do business or help someone do business who is actively engaged in promoting the murder of the President of the United States. I'm getting a question from Freckles in the chat room. How much money does the horn make? What part of the monthly $2,000 is it? It's not much at all. It's not even something that we could count on a monthly basis. It's just folks going there. So, you know, your thoughts are more than welcome on this. And I'll be curious to see which way you fall. We're a few minutes away from our evening's conversation. Let's go to the phones.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, Susan. What's up?
Well, I get back and, oh, boy.
Yeah, coffee break's over. Back on your head.
Yeah.
Okay. And I know it was no coffee break, so that was just...
Okay. Anyway, there is a blunder name for this. Call this what it actually is. It's a curse.
Yeah, it is a curse. I mean, the word curse appears in the psalm, I think.
Now, if I, as a practicing witch, came out with this, not only would I be violating the most basic tenets of my religion, because we don't do that, but also, I would be giving people, you know, hey, this is why they burn witches. No, way back when.
Yeah, right, sure.
Right wing would say.
Well, Corey just shot an email this way saying, boycott Cafe Press and pull the horn products and write letters.
Exactly. That's what I'm going to be emailing Cafe Press tomorrow to let them know. This is why I will no longer be visiting your site, and this is why I will no longer be spending money there. Because of this. Because the last time I saw an atmosphere in this country like this, it actually was about the same time of the same time year. Of course, it was also in 1963.
Yeah. Yep.
Now, I don't know about anybody else, but I get real sick of watching my presidents get ending up blown away. I'm really sick and tired of it. And that's what this is. They're begging one of their Lunar members to pick up a rifle. And they'll keep at it and keep at it and keep at it until sooner or later somebody actually does. And then in public they can say, oh, how terrible, and go home and have a cocktail party and it's great.
You mean like the Reagans?
Like the Reagans.
Yep.
And like the Bushes. But that's what this is. This is a curse. Now, why aren't we saying what this is? You are calling down curses. You are therefore evil.
Well, isn't there this whole thing, you said it would violate your tenets. If you improperly do that to somebody, doesn't that whole I'm rubber and you're glue, it bounces off me and sticks to you, isn't that manifest inside?
Three times over. It's called the threefold path. Whatever you do comes back at you threefold, be it good or ill. Which is why we don't go tossing curses around, because it will come back and bite you in the rear, multiplied.
Is that if you happen to be in the wrong, or is that just in general?
In general.
Okey-doke. Well, I appreciate it, Susan. I'm sorry you had to be away, but it's awfully good to have you back.
I just tuned in for the first time, and I get this laid on me.
No, I know. There's no getting away. Yeah, welcome to the swamp.
On a lighter-hearted note?
Yes.
Did you hear that story out of Texas?
You mean the wedding story?
Yes. I about laughed my silly. There's nothing in my religion that says I can't laugh. In their eagerness to ban homosexual marriage,
they've wiped out marriage in general. A whole bunch of good Southern Baptist fornicators and adulterers. I think that they ought to annul every marriage in the state of Texas. Just boom, done. The entire state living in sin.
Go look at your Bible and see what the punishment is for fornication. According to certain books of the Bible, everybody get your rocks.
Yeah, but it's true. Of course, I don't buy into that hateful.
That's a stony.
Yeah, I don't buy into that hateful Old Testament stuff. But you know that they do. They certainly
I don't
do.
Either. They do.
Yep.
So get your rocks out, guys.
Out, not off. Out.
Exactly.
Of course, they do that, too, when they talk about this stuff.
Exactly.
But this is a family program. We won't talk about
that.
Susan, have a wonderful evening.
Anyway, I will be. You, too. And give my love to Agnes and the kids.
I sure will. You take care. Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.
News Ninja Susan back from hiatus. It's about a minute before the bottom of the hour. Another vote for getting away from Cafe Press, David in Tennessee. To have put it up is a simple mistake, talking about the Psalm 109:8 stuff. To take it down and put it back up is unforgivable. I vote for stepping away from Cafe Press. Texas Betsy says, put me down for an extra $10 a month and let's get out of Cafe Press and tell them why. So there seems to be the beginnings of a groundswell here. And, you know, I offer you these alternatives simply because, you've got a say-so in all of this. You don't have a say-so in any other talk radio operations or radio operations. You've got a say-so in this. And that's one of the things that I hope makes this continue to be special. We are at the bottom of the hour, and we need to take a little break. And we'll come back, I hope, with our guest. We'll be talking a little bit about stress itself and how to deal with it during the holiday season and how to deal with it generally and hopefully how to make something good out of it. You are listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You are listening to The Horn. We'll be back. That's about how it works out. Census working overtime. Lord knows that'll be happening as this holiday season proceeds upon us. A quick one from the email bag. Following up on this Psalm 109:8 business that the right wing is out there using as an imprecation against the President of the United States. Texas Betsy reminds me that with regard to that psalm, the rabbis of old cited Psalm 109 as one of the reasons that King David had so many difficulties in his late adulthood. His ill wishes came back and bit him in the butt. And, well, you know, that karma has a lot of different words. And there are a lot of different words to describe the sense, the sensations and the senses working overtime that we have as the holiday season approaches. And frankly, something that is supposed to be a joyful season, whether it be Thanksgiving, with the homecomings and the like, and the warmth of the family hearth and so forth, or Christmas and the joys that it is supposed to have attendant upon it, a lot of that often falls by the wayside and turns into just a great big Gordian knot of stress. And I'm very pleased to have with us at this time Dr. Carol Scott. She is a stress relief coach. She is the author of Optimal Stress. The book is just out, available at many fine booksellers. You can also go to her website, which is optimalstress.com. She is a practicing emergency room physician. She trained at Johns Hopkins. And if somebody knows about stress, Dr. Scott knows about stress, and not only knows about it, but how to deal with it and how to make it work for you. Dr. Scott, welcome to the program. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
It's a real pleasure, and I think it will be a real benefit for folks listening to the horn this evening. Let's start out with the idea of holiday stress before we go into the stress in general. Do you have a working theory? I mean, for what it is that causes people to get so stressed out and burned out about this time of the year?
You know, you really spoke about a lot of the issues when you opened up this segment. You spoke about people having expectations, family members getting together. Those are really the core elements that cause stress any time of the year, interpersonal relationships, on the job, at home. And at the holiday time, we are particularly excited. We're waiting and anticipating getting together with family members. But deep down, sometimes we have some feelings about family members that, frankly, are such that we only are getting together with them because they are family. So family definitely has something to do with it. But I think the bigger picture is that second piece that you spoke of is our expectations. And when we think about expectations, really, stress is inevitable. Stress is going to happen. The key is, and what I try to help people with, and what I talk about in my book, Optimal Stress, is really transforming those harmful or potentially harmful reactions to stress into healthy responses to stress. And that can be done in large part for the holidays by coming up with some ground rules, if you will, or having an understanding of everyone who's going to be involved about what everyone wants. It's sort of like planning that vacation. You know, the first vacation you went on perhaps with a friend or a group of friends, and everyone wants to do something a little bit differently.
Absolutely.
So this is very similar, only it's even worse because everyone's going to be in the house and it's crowded and so on. So the first tip that I would recommend for someone to think about or for anyone to think about in terms of planning for the holidays is set the expectations realistically. Understand what you have to spend. So this is the planning part as well as the actual getting together. What you have to spend, who's going to be there, and remember the reason for the season. You know, this is about, you know, joy and happiness and having an opportunity to just feel good being with each other and being happy that in gratitude that we're alive and that we're doing as well as we are and we're striving to do as best we can for the next year.
How much? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. We've got to get a flow going here, and I really enjoy your show, so I want to hear you.
Well, no, I was going to ask how much, if you mentioned the setting ground rules and setting budgets, how much does the incessant drumbeat of consumerism play into this stress scenario during the holidays?
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. You know, we see it in the media. We hear it in the media. Our kids see it and hear it. You know, there are two ways to be wealthy. You can have more or you can want less. One of the key things that I advise people for reducing stress, especially around this time of the year, is really to think about that latter, wanting less. If you have your health, that's really the true wealth that you need, and that's really what's going to sustain you. It's a huge part of the problem. I agree with you completely.
Is this may seem overly simplistic, so please forgive me if it is. Is stress an organic process?
Oh, gee, that's not overly simplistic. That's perfect. That's spot on. It is. When you say organic, you're meaning natural and sort of fundamentally having to do with chemicals even. Boy, that takes us way back, doesn't it, to high school, somewhere along the way.
Or maybe a couple of million years back in the difference between fight and flight and everything that the adrenal gland was developed for. Where, if it's chemical, where does it come from?
Absolutely. What stress really is, well, let's back it up even further. If you think about what stress is, and you ask two different people, you get two different responses. One person would probably say that stress is that pressure that they feel, you know, knowing that you have to plan your budget and plan for the holiday season, or planning to go to work in the morning or picking up your kids. Some people would focus on that part of it. Other people would focus on, or another person would focus on the response to those pressures or demands. So if you'd ask someone else about stress, they'd say, oh, it's how I feel, it's my emotions, or it's my anxiety, or how I have to think about things over and over again, or how I worry. But the real power in thinking about understanding how stress works is putting those two components together and recognizing that stress is indeed a process. It's about a cause or triggers for stress and about a response. And the responses can be emotional. They can be our thoughts. It has to do with our actions, the things that we do, and it has to do with our biology. So this gets to what you're talking about. In fact, the biology of the stress response is just one component of an entire process. And when we think about stress as a process, hopefully you can begin to think about things that you can do to mitigate the potentially harmful responses or reactions to stress. So let me share a little bit more about what that biologic response is like.
Please.
Exactly right. That biologic response is really a reflection of what I call the ultimate mind-body connection. When you think about it, it's your mind that interprets what we see and what we hear. And it's your mind, and it's unique for you and unique for me. It's my mind, your mind, that's going to interpret and decide whether or not something is a trigger, whether or not it's something that, you know, just all of a sudden, almost automatically, your mind will decide when you see that car, that light, that person, that email message that comes up in your inbox, that when you see the number on the caller ID on your phone, you'll decide almost instantaneously whether or not that's something you think you can cope with. You know, this whole system, this biologic system evolved from the time when most of our threats were physical threats, like lions and tigers and bears. But the truth of it is that now most of the threats in our high-paced, fast-paced society really have to do with our thoughts, you know, with technology, with time, and so on. But nevertheless, getting back to what you were bringing us to, it is our mind that instantaneously allows us to perceive something as a threat. And once that occurs, it sets off a cascade, just a surge of several different biochemical and organic responses. The first thing that happens is your mind sends almost an instant message, like an instant message on a computer, to your kidneys, to an area right above your kidneys called the adrenal gland. And you know the drill here. You release adrenaline. And that adrenaline is that fight or flight hormone that really allows you to do what you need to do in an emergency. So this is a great system for an emergency because basically what your body is saying is, hey, wait a second, I have to either fight or flight or do something in between. I need energy. So your whole body just shifts with that adrenaline along with cortisol, which comes along a little bit later. And all of a sudden your body says, geez, my heart needs to beat faster. I have to have higher blood pressure because I need to be able to get blood to my brain because, you know, when you're stressed, you have that fight or flight response. You become very mentally alert. You become aware of things. You see things. Your senses are more sensitive. Also, you have to have new oxygen and blood to your muscles in case you have to run. So it shifts that pumping of your heart. It's going to get that blood and that fresh oxygen to your muscles and your legs so you can run if you need to. And there are a lot of other biologic responses. And I'm sharing with you the fact that this is great. So when we talk about being stressed, stress is great acutely. I'm telling you, if you don't get that adrenaline, that cortisol going in an emergency situation from a physical threat or even in a in a situation where you have to have high performance, where you've got to meet that deadline, you've got a lot of things that you have to take care of, and you need to be creative, we need that surge of adrenaline and cortisol. We need that biological surge.
And there are those of us, and I'm guilty of it, I call myself a deadliner, in that, you know, once I've got a deadline and once I've done my obligatory procrastination, I perform better in an under the gun situation, and I can well imagine that you've got to be able to manage this kind of thing in something like an emergency room setting. So you're absolutely right that it has a positive effect. But then the question becomes one of the teaching that you do all over the country in a variety of settings. How do you teach people to manage it and recognize it and channel it?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's something that we all recognize and understand it in an emergency situation, what we were just describing. But the real problem is, and the real challenge is, and for every person it's different, just as you said, is recognizing when you've gotten to that tipping point. Because I'm just like, even in my personal life, you know, I'm the same way as you are in terms of being a deadliner. I love that because, of course, I work in the emergency room, and what we're trying to avoid is flatliners in the emergency room.
Yes.
That was a little bit of humor.
Yes.
And I have to tell you that, share with you that I'm actually leaving the hospital now. I was working in the emergency room all day today, and so I'm a little stressed just because we see so many patients these days who are concerned about, particularly moms and parents with their kids with potentially having a swine flu. So trust me, I'm coming down now on from having the adrenaline pumping all day. But what I teach people to do is to recognize in situations where you don't need that adrenaline, to recognize when you're a little irritable what your personal signs or signals are. And for each of us, it's going to be different. Remember when I talked about that stress is a process?
Yes.
Those triggers and the responses, okay? So there are four types of responses. Remember I said that this is the mind-body connection, the ultimate mind-body connection. You know, in fact, another way to think about that is, remember when your mother used to tell you, go mind this, or don't mind me?
Mm-hmm.
People said mind, what they're really talking about is your ability to be aware of something, to take something in, and to be attentive to it. And the other place that it's important to think about, and I would say to you, if you think something's in your mind, when you have chest pain or you have bellyache or you have a headache, it's not just in your mind. It's in your mind, and it's important for you to recognize it. That can be one of the signals that will allow you to know that chest tightness, that, in fact, you're beyond that tipping point. And your mind actually is interpreting things and sending signals that are going to affect your GI system, your heart, your blood pressure will be affected by it. So those four responses, the biological response, the behavioral response, your thinking, and your emotions, each of us has to tap into and better understand what my unique signals are, what your unique signals are that let you know when you're leaving what I call the best stress zone. And the best stress zone is that place where you function and you thrive. In fact, you function better than you would otherwise, not because you're necessarily functioning on an adrenaline rush, but somewhere that's more comfortable for you. The most comfortable place for most people is not going to be, frankly, where it is for me working in the ER, where I work around a lot of people who really function on high adrenaline. But some place in between that's more comfortable, a place that you and your doctor really understand and know that's a good place for your heart rate, for your blood pressure, and where you're going to be able to think clearly, be able to reach those stretch goals, meet those demands, and better in your life.
To what degree do external substances play into our stress existence, Doctor? I think about the proliferation of so-called energy shots, energy beverages, on the market today. And of course, there's always, you know, somebody out there is going to have too much at the office party and wind up with a lampshade on the head. Beyond simply managing one's intake of these things, what is it that they actually do to the body? Is it like artificial stress?
Oh, it is. I'll respond to that in a couple ways. The first thing that I think is really important for us to think about is when you take those substances in around the heart, around the holiday times, I don't know if you know, but did you know that more people die of heart disease on Christmas Day than any other day of the year?
No.
It's a fact. More people die on Christmas, and one of the factors is the change in diet, alcohol, substances. And I know you were talking about stimulants for energy, but it made me want to bring this up because I think it's important for people to know. And it's thought that, well, let me tell you how we know this. There were a couple of studies that were done. They were done almost 5 years ago where researchers looked at the National Center for Health Statistics, the death certificates there for deaths that occur. They correlated it with certain codes, and they determined that there is a discrete, very, very specific peak of about 5% excess deaths that occur on Christmas Day. The second highest day is on New Year's Day, and the third highest day is on the day after Christmas. And now if you take and put some numbers to that, there are about 2,500 people a day that die of cardiovascular disease, that's heart attacks, because of high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, or heart attack. 2,500 people a day. There are 5% more that occur on those days. And it's thought to be due to taking in things like alcohol, drinking differently, eating differently. Another key part of this, which you can prevent, is a lot of people delay going to get help during the holidays because you're with your families. You know, particularly older people may not want to tell someone, somebody who's younger may not want to acknowledge that they're feeling something. That little indigestion that just won't go away. So that's very preventable. If you feel that something's not right, and particularly if you have a known history of heart disease, if you have any signals or signs that something's not right, you need to let someone know, call 911, or do what you need to do to get the appropriate care. You know, another cause of that excess peak that occurs around the holidays is due to the fact that people don't take their medications, they don't follow their normal routines. You know, how you get in a hurry, you pack your things, and you forget your medication. I would say to your listeners right now, somebody's planning to go for the holidays, pack the medications now. Take aside enough for those 4, 5, or 6 days, put it in a special container, tuck it away someplace so that you know that you're going to be there. This is kind of interesting, and it's something that when I see patients coming into the emergency department from being out of town, and they know they have a health condition, I sometimes take the time to educate them right on the spot, so I really am glad that we're getting a chance to talk about this tonight, Bob.
Well, as we consider those things and what happens to people during the course of the holidays, and we you talked about the setting the ground rules, pack your meds, and it sounds like pay attention to diet, don't overdo it. When we take this all together, is there a picture of somebody who is more or less prone, or more prone to these kind of problems? For instance, the classic type A versus type B or type Z personalities. Who's more susceptible to this kind of thing? Men versus women. Ethnicity differences, are those quantifiable?
I'm not familiar with the fact that they are, but you're in terms of ethnicity or women and men, you know, the good and bad news is that women have caught up with the guys in a lot of areas of our society and functioning, and the sad news is that we've also caught up with you guys in terms of having heart disease as the number one cause of death for us. So, you know, there's no gift for either of us in that department. But when you talk about people with type A personality, that definitely is a factor. Do you know people with type A personalities, Bob?
Oh, a couple.
I know exactly what you mean. I have to work at that myself. But type A personalities, there's that sense of time urgency. That's very prevalent, but you want to know, this is kind of interesting since you bring it up. Can I tell this little story?
Oh, please, please do. That's the very heart and soul of what we do here.
Well, it turns out that the whole definition of type A personality behavior pattern, and that's really the full name. But not just a type A personality, but it's a type A behavior pattern. That's the way it was originally described by two cardiologists. This was back in the 60s. And here's how they came to an understanding of what we know now. They called in some upholsterers to change the cloth on the chairs in their waiting room when they were cardiologists. Friedman was the name of the senior cardiologist in this group. And the repair people said, "Doc, there's a problem here. Your chairs are worn, but there's a pattern to how they're worn. They're worn on the edges of the seat." So what's going on?
Holy cow.
Isn't that kind of odd? And it was only because of that that the cardiologists, being scientists and being curious, they went out and they looked at the chairs and they said, "There's a problem here. There really is a pattern in how the seats are worn." So it was that triggered these gentlemen, these doctors, to begin to look at and ask questions of their patients. So the original description of this type A, and that's why it was called a behavior pattern, was based around the fact that these are people who are impatient and have a sense of time urgency. Those were the core elements initially. It was about maybe 10 years later when further researchers looked at the fact that the real lethal element in type A behavior pattern, and you'll love this, it's really anger and hostility.
So that separates out as a function of stress within the cardiologist's practice. The people wearing the edges of their seats were getting madder and madder and madder at the fact that they were waiting for, you know, I knew that guy, he was my father. He'd look over at my mother and say, "Margaret, 2 hours is enough, we're out of here." "Now, Kenneth, settle down. And it wasn't just stress, it was straight up anger.
Right.
Because he felt like his time was not valued.
That's exactly right. And it happens today. And I hate to say it, sometimes I have to suppress it when I'm sitting in traffic. Those are people with road rage, the people who are in line in the grocery stores and the airport. And, you know, that really happens around the holidays time. You go out and you want to have a pleasant evening shopping, and the next thing that you know, there's somebody behind you, you know, "Hurry up, hurry up, hurry up." So, yeah, that's when you spoke of type A behavior pattern, that's a critical piece of what occurs around the holidays to trigger cardiac events, because ultimately having a cardiac event, a heart attack or going into heart failure, a cardiac event is about a triggering of something, because I don't know if you've had relatives or if you're familiar with, but we hear about it and see it on TV when you see these commercials with blood vessels with little platelets floating around. The central core concept that leads ultimately to a heart attack is the triggering of the rupture of a plaque that's inside of a blood vessel when there's been elevated lipid and inflammation and a lot of other factors. So what we know is anger, in addition to being emotionally upset, anger is one of the key factors in anger is one of the key factors that triggers or allows emotion to trigger a rupture of those plaques, leading to heart attacks and strokes. And in fact, it's not just that one episode of anger, that instant of anger. It's anger that has a prolonged hazard period, and that's what's used in the literature by scientists who study this. It's called a hazard period. The hazard period for anger, believe it or not, can last for up to 24 hours. You have disrupted your cardiovascular system, your heart system, in such a way, the nerves and the chemicals and the hormones that serve that system, that for 24 hours, up to 24 hours, you can be at risk for an additional for a heart attack or a stroke. So of course, here's the deal: the person has a type A behavior pattern. So of course, not only are they going to get upset when they go to the store that night, they have to stand in line or go to the gas station, they have to stand in line to get to the pump. The next morning, and of course we know there's such a thing as circadian rhythm, which is the ebb and flow of your cortisol, which is a natural thing, which is why in any event, there are more patients that come into the ER, more people have heart attacks and strokes in the morning hours just because of biochemical factors. So this person has got angry in the store the night before. Then they're going to have normally a biochemical predisposition to have a problem. Then they get up, the clock goes off, and they get a phone call or they get an email, and, you know, it's like a perfect storm. And that person's showing up in my emergency department.
Does it matter whether the anger is externalized or internalized? I mean, we all know the guy who gets red in the face and just blows up, and it's there for everybody to see. On the other hand, there's the person who appears to be as cool as a cucumber on the outside, but is a seething ball of rage on the inside. Are those reactions the same within that cortisol cycle that you were describing, or do they diverge?
They diverge. Great question. They diverge in a couple of ways. The person that's going to internalize it, they're going to have problems long term. You're not going to have that immediate burst of that plaque. You're going to have the development of more atherosclerosis, of hardening of the arteries sooner. They're going to go down their own path, and they will have some harmful, they will have ultimately disability prematurely and maybe an earlier death. The person who externally has it is going to have it more quickly, and there's actually an anger scale that's used in most studies that have looked at this. And as I recall it, I haven't looked at that literature in a while, but as I recall it, it's a scale of, I think, 1 to 7 and up to a 5 were the people who really had emergency events. And 5, number doesn't mean anything, but here's what that translates into. I think the definition is, you were so angry that you either clenched your fists, you were grinding your teeth, or you pounded something, or you were enraged. So, you know, we all know what that looks like, right? We haven't been there ourselves at some point. So those are the people that are going to have that emergency. They're going to have that immediate cardiac event. The other people are going to have it long-term. And unfortunately, the people who have it long-term, if you hold it in, and maybe that's another conversation we can have sometime, but that's a part of the whole syndrome of premature disability and death that occurs when you really don't problem solve and deal with chronic stress. Because what we've been talking about are acute stresses, the things that come up that are unexpected things, that come up in our lives that sort of disturb things or disrupt things. I call acute stressors disruptions in your life. But for most of us, the harmful effects of stress are due to chronic stressors, which are those disparities in our life. And I mean, I talk about all of this in my book, Optimal Stress, as well, but disparities are the difference between what we want or what we live or what we experience in life and what we'd like to have or what we think we deserve, you know, the wrong job, maybe a marriage that isn't a happy one, maybe the children have their chronic illnesses. Some things that are chronic stressors we can work with, and oftentimes we don't. We don't problem solve or take the time to sort of sort it out. We just kind of go along to get along. So we want that emotional response that we have, but the body is still having a physiologic response. And by that, I mean that biologic, what you spoke about at the very beginning, those biochemicals, that cortisol is there. And cortisol is the real culprit for long-term chronic stress causing disease. Cortisol being present, believe it or not, it increases insulin resistance. So if you've got a family predisposition for diabetes, you'll develop a diabetes. Cortisol in women, when they get past menopause, you no longer have that estrogen to protect you. It's going to accelerate the development of osteoporosis. Cortisol, chronically, if you are menstruating as a woman, it's going to cause you to stop having your periods, and you'll have irregular periods. And, you know, the other thing that is very common, particularly for men, cortisol is there, you're chronically stressed, sexual function. It becomes dysfunctional. In fact, one of the things that occurs when you have true relaxation, which is a biologic response, not reading, going to YouTube, playing ball, or, you know, shopping for shoes. True relaxation is a biologic response that's the opposite of the stress response. Stress response, you get adrenaline and cortisol release. It's something that's automatic. The relaxation response is a manual response. It's something you have to consciously turn on. It's a learned skill. I included in something that I call the power pause.
I was about to ask you about that.
and the power pause is really a way to turn it on, but it's really important to know you can counter those. And the reason I brought it up with talking about chronic stress is when you trigger the biologic response, the relaxation response, you release nitrous oxide. And nitrous oxide is something that's released with Viagra. And so when we talk about relaxation, there's some it's not a cause and effect by any means, but there definitely there's something to be said for the fact that being balanced in life is really about balancing your biochemistry. And it's something that you can do. There's skills that you can learn to make this work. And the power pause is something that I put forth, adding on to the work of Dr. Herbert Benson, who described the relaxation response. I link that to some thought processes that I call mind shifting that allow you to really, truly relax, to rid yourself of negative thoughts, and to trigger consciously the release of endorphins, those feel-good hormones, and serotonin, nitrous oxide, that give you more clarity in your thinking, they make you feel good, and it allows you to really preserve your health. You know, this isn't something that's just done as play or leisure. I really put forth to people and coach and help people understand that learning this skill can prolong your life, but it helps you age more successfully. Guess what, Bob? You can even have more fun along the way. How about that?
Well, that's certainly a bonus, and all of this is detailed inside Optimal Stress, I trust.
Yes, it is.
And as you noted, optimalstress.com, just like it sounds, is the website available from Amazon, Powell's, I assume, most major book retailers. Is what you're teaching in the book something that folks who are facing the holiday season, Dr. Scott, can put into practice and have a better holiday season this year, as opposed to, you know, something where you've got to master 17 different moves in Tai Chi before you get some help next year?
Absolutely, and that's one of the reasons why I developed this, because people that I tend to work with in terms of one-on-one coaching, high-performing, high-achieving people like you, like me, like people who are listening, we don't really have time. If you're a mom and you got to take care of your kids, you don't even need to be working outside of the home. If you're performing at a level where there's so much going on, you're juggling demands, meeting time constraints, you need something that works easily, quickly, that you can do, and that you can do in a matter of 5 or 10 minutes. The power pause does not require any equipment, doesn't require any going to the gym, doesn't require any money. It's about just breathing, and it doesn't require any type of belief system, you know, or using the words meditation. It's similar to a meditative state, but it's not that. It's being very awake and just learning a few simple steps. In fact, I've got a description about it on my website, optimalstress.com. There's a little button that says to learn about the power pause, and there is a description of it and a practice track, and listening to that for about 15 minutes, most people find that they can find something from that really works for them. Obviously, many of the things that we've talked about tonight are in the book, but that's something that is free, it's available, and it's on the website.
Well, wonderful. Dr. Scott, thank you so much for joining us this evening. I really genuinely enjoyed the conversation, and I look forward to reading the book and maybe putting a little bit of it into practice in my life. Behind the microphone, I tend to be more sedentary than I ought to be, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm sitting here navel-gazing, if you know what I mean. I wish you the best. I hope the book sells well. I hope some folks here in the Horn audience pick up a copy. And I wish you the very best in just helping people get better, because this really is it's a health issue, and the way people are is not well, and this is a step toward wellness, is it not?
It is. It is. And I am grateful to you, Bob, for having me on the show and giving me this opportunity to reach your listeners.
Well, it has been a pleasure, and a very happy holiday season to you, Doctor.
You too. Take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And that is Dr. Carol Scott, author of Optimal Stress. OptimalStress.com is the website, the book available at finer book retailers everywhere. It's been out for a couple of days. If you know, I know from my own life, starting about October, I start bugging about the holidays. Not because I don't love Jesus or not because of it, no. I look forward. You know, I work my butt off. Agnes and I both do. On Thanksgiving Day and Christmas Day, we work our butts off on the Christmas and Thanksgiving meal. But it doesn't really feel like that much work because there's just so much joy and pleasure that goes into it. But I specifically asked Dr. Scott about the consumerist aspect of it because I think that's what contributes. I think that's what contributes to most of what's wrong with the holidays. We're being gapped to death and Sears to death and Macy's to death and the ones that really go through me. It's not the guy giving the girl the diamond in the firelight of the rental cabin somewhere in the snow. It's not the Budweiser commercials with the Clydesdales pulling the sleigh somewhere on some other continent where it snows, because that doesn't happen on Christmas Day very much in this country anymore. You know, shot up somewhere on Hudson's Bay in Canada maybe. It's not any of the ones that drive me crazy are the car commercials. That's the one that just make me a little bit nuts. So we'll take a break. Green News Report is on the way. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. We'll be right back.
Get the sun. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, November 19, 2009.
Scientists warn while America yawns. Climate thunder down under. It's fire season again in Australia, and their debate over climate change heats up.
They are reckless gamblers who are betting all of our futures on their arrogant assumption that their intuitions should triumph over all evidence. The logic of these skeptics belongs in the casino, not in the science laboratory.
Plus, Sarah Palin goes rogue on the environment.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Prepare for 6 minutes of green news and snarky comment.
You may know something that thousands of other scientists don't. You know, they won a Nobel Prize. You and I didn't.
Speak for yourself, John Kerry. This is your Green News Report. Today's Green News Report is brought to you by VelvetRevolution.us, cracking down on ideologues who incite violence over our airwaves. Sign the petition demanding action from the DOJ and Congress before it's too late. Please stop by StopDomesticTerror.com, that's StopDomesticTerror.com, and sign on to the campaign. Okay, Desi, what do you have for us today?
A new study warns that global temperatures could potentially rise 11 degrees by the end of the century.
Good Lord.
In the most comprehensive measurement of CO2 in the atmosphere to date, scientists say levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere show that global carbon emissions have jumped nearly 30% since 2000. They warn that runaway emissions are pouring into the atmosphere faster than can be absorbed by the Earth's natural processes, faster than the oceans and trees and plants can absorb it. They found clear signs that those natural carbon sinks are absorbing less CO2 than ever before, which they warn risks putting us on a path to a global average temperature rise of 11 degrees or 6 degrees Celsius. Climate scientists say a limit of only 2 degrees Celsius is necessary to avoid potentially catastrophic consequences, among them sea level rise, ocean acidification, and prolonged droughts.
We keep hearing study after study after study warning about sea level rise and warmth. Are there studies coming out that show the opposite, that these things aren't true?
No, there aren't, actually. And the researchers called on world leaders to muster the political will to drastically cut greenhouse gas emissions that are blamed for global warming when nations meet at the UN Climate Summit in Copenhagen in December. But as we reported on Tuesday, those world leaders have pushed back the deadline for a legally binding treaty into 2010 and will instead focus on achieving an interim political agreement in Copenhagen.
Climate skeptics are quite literally holding the world to ransom.
That was Prime Minister of Australia Kevin Rudd, who recently blasted the vested interests lobbying to kill action on climate change, both in Australia and the U.S., accusing them of
provoking fear campaigns in every country they can. And our children's fate, our grandchildren's fate, will lie entirely with them. It is time to remove any polite veneer from this debate.
In that speech, Prime Minister Rudd pointed out that Australia is already seeing the effects of climate change. And this week, Australia issued its first ever catastrophic fire warning yesterday. The government urged residents to evacuate some areas affected by a heat wave that's already breaking last year's records and said that any fire that erupts could quickly become uncontrollable. Four fires are already blazing out of control, and it's only the beginning of their fire season.
Yeah, and they had a terrible fire season last year. A number of deaths.
170 people were killed last year, and because of that, the Australian government has abandoned its previous policy called Stay and Defend, which allowed homeowners to stay to defend their properties rather than evacuate, and that was blamed for last year's high death toll because they had no time to get out because the fires were so strong. Meanwhile, the climate change denial campaign appears to be winning. Here's Sarah Palin this week on Rush Limbaugh.
It's kind of tough to figure out with the shady science right now. What are we supposed to be doing right now with our climate? Are we warming or are we cooling?
We're warming, Sarah. The science is not shady.
Right. A recent poll, though, shows that even as the climate science and the evidence becomes more definitive and dire, the American public has become less concerned about the consequences. A poll from the Pew Research Center shows that over a year ago, 71% of Americans believed global warming was occurring, but that dropped to only 56% as of last month.
The propagandists and liars are doing a hell of a good job putting out their disinformation.
It's a well-known human trait that immediate threats take precedence over longer-term threats, and also, people do become entrenched in their ideology, even in the face of obvious contradictions. But, you know, it's also perhaps the fault of our news media. You didn't hear about the report warning of the 11-degree temperature rise, perhaps because it came out on the same day as Sarah Palin's book, Going Rogue.
Well, at least we have our priorities straight. Please read about that and much more at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. You can follow us at Green News Report on Twitter. Send us love letters or hate mail, your choice. Our email address is greennews@bradblog.com, and you can download our reports automatically to your computer at iTunes. Please help spread the word and tell your friends that, yes, science is real. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I like those stories about angels, unicorns, and elves. Now, I like those stories as much as anybody else, but when I'm seeking knowledge, either simple or abstract, the facts are with science.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, hour number two is somewhat belatedly underway. It's about 24 minutes past the hour. Your portion of the program is upon us. Whatever is on your mind is more than welcome and open for discussion. I had an off-air conversation with Dr. Scott as well, and what an amazing woman she is. What a degree of dedication, and what a mission she's on. Because as she described for you what these things do to us and how they shorten lives and make lives... what's the old phrase? Nasty, brutish, and short. The nasty and the brutish and the short are all functions of the stress that we deal with, and the fact that we don't know how to deal with it. And her mission, as I sense it, is to help people lead better, more meaningful lives just by learning to manage the processes that are inherent to our existence every day. So if you get a chance, I think you will certainly benefit, A, by going to optimalstress.com and checking out that checking out the excerpt that is available for you there. And also, if you have the wherewithal, and if you are someone who does not necessarily handle their stress well, and you know what, even if you think that you do, you might find out that you don't. Agnes is making a guest appearance inside the studio, and she's got her hand in the air waving. She's just waving. Oh, I don't deal with stress well. You know, that that information about what an outburst can do to a human being for 24 hours. The come down period. And I know, you know, if I lose it, I know I'm a wreck for a while. You know, got to walk in the yard. I know, I don't lose it. Quit making faces at me, Agnes. Dadgummit. I'm a teddy bear. I'm a navel gazer. That's what I do. 3 hours, 3 hours right here, doing conversation radio, doing the mixing and everything and answering the phones. And the whole time I'm reading the chat room and gazing at my navel. Yes. Yes, I am. Wow, am I a bad liar. A quick couple of emails. Cindy wrote in and said, excellent conversation. How about the folks who take out their rage behind the wheel? And I think Dr. Scott addressed that. Because whether it's internalized or externalized, you know from the sound of the horn, whether it's a polite little beep, you know, light screen or you get out of the way. Yeah. Long skinny pedal on the right, lady, use it. Yeah, that kind of thing. Or if you're around here and they just get out of the car to come dress you down. Weesh. This in from Corey. Dear Cafe Press, since you've decided to sell the Bible's Psalms 108 verse to pray for Obama, it incites violence and you're being part of it. I will cease purchasing ever from you and tell my friends not to buy from you. It's a boycott, Cafe Press. You should have pulled the T-shirts and left them. Old. Way to go, Corey. Thank you. And this from ELO, otherwise known in the real world as Sue. She says, you can read this on air to our listeners. She says, I can have the horn store offline at Cafe Press in a matter of minutes. I'll have that done tonight. Oddly enough, I'd been thinking of moving our store to Zazzle.com for a while now. Zazzle, it turns out, released a similar statement yesterday, but unlike Cafe Press, has stood behind it. She says moving the store will mean fiddling with the templates a bit, but that's really no big deal. And I don't know if I was supposed to share this part, but I'm going to anyway. Sue is having surgery at 6:30 Monday morning. She says, so while taking the Cafe Press store down will be quick, getting the new store up and running will likely take a week or better, as pre-surgery discomfort prevents sitting in one place for too long, and post-op pain ain't a whole lot better. Just be patient, keep checking the website, and look for the new designs that have been in the works for a while now, very shortly.
We love you, Sue.
We do indeed. We do indeed. And, of course, in light of the previous conversation with Dr. Scott, let me simply say that we all urge Sue not to stress out about the horn store. I probably should have been a little bit more, but the story is what the story was, and it was not an immediate call to action for Sue to, jump up and get at it. But bless her heart, Sue's that way, and that's why we love her so much, or at least a portion of why we love her so much, right? Yeah, Agnes just loves her, unconditionally and without reservation. Let's go to the phones now. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
I'm not going to be long, but I wanted to talk about health care.
Okay.
I have just a little bit about health care. It's just some things I've been wanting to say and some that came to my mind today, too, from some of the things I saw on TV. You heard about Miss Fox, Foxy.
Which part? I saw something about her in civil rights that just made me gag, but
she's claiming that after all, we're the ones that fought for civil rights.
I know. I know. It just makes you want to.
And you know what? If that man, if that other congressman, I don't know who he is, but I would like to thank him. If he hadn't have corrected her, I think they really don't mind saying that they did these things because she's a school teacher. She should know something about history.
And you would think, but she know, but she's a revisionist. Okay, I mean,
yeah, and
that's a fancy word for makes stuff up as she goes along.
Well, I guess that's what I was trying to say. Yeah.
Yeah. The quote.
If you believe them, that's fine. They don't care. They'll take credit for it.
Look, they walk arm in arm with an outfit that freely and openly runs dummied up footage and calls it news. You know, Fox had to admit again that they got caught running dummied up footage. But of
they
course,
did something else. So
it was a mistake.
It wasn't about Sarah.
Well, this was this
another one.
Yeah, this one was about Sarah.
Yeah.
Where they said, "Oh, crowds are coming out," and then they ran
like all the people that came out when she was running.
Right. They ran footage from a year ago. I mean, please.
But what I wanted to bring up about health care was, I just found out today that we're going to have a raise. I have Advantage. And I wanted to say something about Advantage. I don't know how many people know about it, but I know the Republicans like to say how endangered it is. You know what I'm talking about, don't you?
Yes, yes.
Okay. It's Medicare, but it's a little different, you know. It's got a few more things. Anyway, but your doctors are limited and so forth. But anyway, I got notice today about them being raising, and I called them up, and I thought, what's going on, you know? And they said, oh, well, you know, health care's gone up. I said, yeah, everything but our part is going up, you know. But that's sake. But I just want to tell you the history of Advantage in our county. They used to have it, and then they withdrew it. Now, this is before we got Part D for prescription.
Right.
They didn't come back in our county until the Part D came in. And I've heard some people say they may go out again. So this has got nothing to do with what we're trying to get done in medical care, because they'll leave if they want to. If they're not making what they want to make, they will leave. And the Republicans try to say, oh, this is going to bring it about, which, surprise, surprise, right?
Well, exactly.
And then the other thing I wanted to say, I saw Coburn, and I had to turn it because I just got to where I just can't stand that man. He had a big...
Bless your heart. I mean, really, I just can't...
I guess that's my stress level I've got to work with.
Well, you know what? I flip across in Juanita. I'm good for maybe 45 seconds worth of Fox before I'm, you know, fumbling for the remote. Oh, get it off of there. So, you know, you're not alone.
You got my email about Elizabeth?
No.
She's going to be on Hannity tonight.
Oh, dear.
And I sent you an email, and I said, since you can get the White Power.
The White Power Network.
Yeah. Since you can get that, I just let you know you might.
Well, to be fair, I was off at the doctor's for the better part of the afternoon trying to find out, you know, what's going on with my sinuses, my ears, my neck, you know.
Well, if you're like me, half the time I don't get my emails until way later.
Well, I think that there are blockages in the series of tubes. You know,
I do too.
You know, Juanita, it's not a big truck. Yeah, but God, Senator Stevens, I'm sorry. That's unfair of me. I won't miss an opportunity to use it. It's not a big truck, so please forgive me. But yeah, sometimes, well, I get a lot of emails as it is, and then secondarily, sometimes I get emails that were sent days ago.
Yeah.
And apparently,
yeah, I do too. I do too, same way.
Apparently, they've been to Point Barrow first, or Tierra del Fuego, or something, and finally, you know, came wandering home with their tails wagging behind them,
well,
or something.
Kind of like mail, you know, real mail, or what do you call it, snail mail?
Yeah, snail mail. I'm sure the Postal Service doesn't like that, but
yeah.
And you know, the fact of the matter is, we give a lot of grief to the Postal Service.
Yeah, but they do really.
Well, you know, if just
ordinarily,
you know, the next time you're thinking, and I don't necessarily mean you, I mean anyone, the next time any of us are thinking about griping about the cost of a postage stamp, take that same letter to your local UPS or FedEx place and say, I'd like to get this to where it's going in 3 days.
Yeah.
And they will look at you and say, that'll be $15.
You're right. You're
so,
right.
You know, at that under those circumstances, 50 cents or so, you know, pretty good bargain.
Right. You better believe it. But he, I wanted to tell you about Coburn. He had this thing up, you know, about a child that her parents had put a sign on her about, I owe $38,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he was talking about how much everything's going to cost and all. But, you know, this is something I've been wanting to say for a while, and that made me think of it. What about the children who don't live to see their debt? The ones that don't have any kind of care. And there's plenty of them.
Oh, without a doubt. You know, shame on me, Juanita, but the fact is I have not brought out the fact, and I haven't gone and adequately researched it either, but of those 45,000 people who die every year in the United States because of our devotion to the for-profit, avarice-driven healthcare insurance industry, some percentage of that 45,000 Americans are children.
Right.
There's no getting around it. Some, you know, some percentage of those 45,000 are pregnant mothers.
Yeah, of course.
But it's okay by the insurance industry.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's another thing, that if there was some way that we could figure out what kind of wording to use about abortion, is they have the right to life, but it's something about they believe in abortion of everybody that's living except them. You know, there'd be some way to word that. You know, because they are aborting, like, people that they're, oh, well, they could go to the emergency room. You still hear them saying that.
Oh, I know.
Oh, I'd love for them to remember what Susan said. It'll come back on you, but.
I know.
And I agree with her.
Well, then I got about 8 dozen lightning bolts waiting for me somewhere down the road for all the ones that I've called down on the unjust and the unrighteous.
But I can understand, but, you know, think about, I mean, there's some way that it could be, we got to find a way to turn it around, and that they're aborting children that don't have health care. They're aborting mother. Did you heard about that woman that sold her child into pornography?
Yes.
And the little girl was killed?
Yes.
Beautiful. Oh, just beautiful little girl. I mean, that don't make any difference, you know, about the way she looked, but, you know, who knows how desperate that woman was. She had to be, you know. People are losing their feelings for one another, like that girl, you know, she killed a little girl just wanted to see somebody die, what it was like, you know. So, but this all is connected. I mean, and that, what have they done about abortion anyway?
Not a blessed thing.
No. Except
that. Not that they ever had any intention of it, okay?
Right.
Because it's the most cynical kind of politics to keep an interest group ginned up about an issue that you keep promising you're going to do something about, but then don't. And that's exactly, and that's how that racket works.
Yeah. But you take, like, now, now my son, he gets a little more a month than I do, and he has to pay more. And they've raised his where he's not, he's going to hardly be able to go to a doctor because of the co-pays. You know, it wasn't too bad before. It was like $10, but you take, if you have physical therapy and they want you to go 3 days a week, that's $30 a week, $120 a month, thereabouts, you know. But now he's just gone up to 35, and then they'll always have you to have extra charges, too, that you don't even know that, oh, they'll say, well, in this case, you know, I have to do that, too. In this case, you owe this because of such and such. So we're really, you know, we're getting more and more limited on medical care. And we're under, what do they call it when they fork it out bit by bit? We've been under that for a long time, even when you have care.
Mice?
But you know, just like, I don't know about your eye. I didn't hear you talk, but I heard you say something about it. And did you ever get it taken care of?
Well, I'm hoping to stop by and have a. Yeah, I got, you know, I got looked at by the doctor who looked at my coverage and said, well, yeah, go to blazes.
Yeah.
So we didn't go back to him. But I'm hoping to maybe have it looked at tomorrow. But what I'm being told is it's a function of blood pressure. And there's that word again, stress.
Yeah. She really was good, that doctor. And, you know, realizing you think, now, I'm a person, you probably think I'm real calm, but I'm one of those seethers inside, and I've had to learn to try to relax, but I probably, like you say, you don't realize that you're more upset than you think you are sometimes.
Right, because even... You there, Juanita? Oops. I hope Juanita's okay. It sounds like maybe her son was doing some work inside the house. I know how that goes. Kid A in the chat room, I thought Juanita was crushing ice. 10,000 starving comedians in the world, and we got a funny chat room. Yeah, Agent Fred bit us. But, well, look. You want a perfect example of what's wrong with the healthcare. Avarice-driven healthcare industry in this country, and I mean the insurance companies. Well, look, it's time for your old friend Cigna to raise its head. And the issue in this case is the refusal of a health insurance company denying claims for ongoing care. According to the California Nurses Association, 21% of all insurance claims filed in the first half of 2009 in the state of California alone were denied. They were denied. 21%. No wonder. Dear God. In Franklin County, Missouri, there is a lovely little girl by the name of Madison Leuchtman. She was born with a condition called bilateral atresia. She doesn't have ear canals in both of her ears. In order to be able to hear, she wears a device on a headband that allows her to comprehend sound. And despite the challenges that she faces, she's at the top of her kindergarten class, and she is learning to read. It's a beautiful thing. But she is a growing little girl. She is a growing, beautiful little six-year-old girl. And she's going to require a new implant to be able to recognize sounds. You know about implants, right? Rush Limbaugh, the millionaire, with the cochlear implants that allow him to hear, even though he abused his body for years with street opiates that drove him deaf as opiates will. Yeah, he's got cochlear implants. Madison has a speech therapist. The speech therapist has said that if she doesn't get her implants by the age of 7, she will not be able to blend her words. And quoting, she won't be able to hear herself talk. You know, if you ever go into anything that requires you to have your voice recorded, early on you will have to get used to the, and it's usually horrifying to everyone to some degree or another, because the way our voices sound inside our skulls with the resonance and everything that goes on is completely different from how the rest of the world hears us with the noises that come out of our mouths. It was a trial. It was a trauma to me when I first got started way back when at the Gospel Voice. And I heard my recorded voice the first couple of times. I was ready to quit. Nobody would want to hear that. How awful. Because, you know, inside my own head, I have a voice like Richard Burton. And, you know, it didn't come out that way. But that internal resonance is what allows us to speak and comprehend what we're speaking. And when you can't hear, you speak profoundly differently. If she doesn't have the implants by the age of 7, it's all cancel Christmas for Madison's future as a speaker of human language. And without the implants, her physician, her pediatrician, Dr. Randall Clary, insists that she'll never be able to hear again. It just won't. Enter stage left. No, enter stage right wing. Cigna. One after another, Cigna has denied Madison's claims for the $20,000 paltry dollars it will cost for the implant. They even went so far as to issue a statement to Fox 2, the local news channel there in Missouri, saying, and I quote, "It is not unusual for commercial benefit plans to exclude hearing-assisted devices." Not unusual. Cue Tom Jones. Dr. Clary responded, "This is obviously medically necessary. You have a child that has no ear canals." Dr. Clary says he gets these denials on a weekly basis. If you want to see lovely young Madison Leuchtman, go over to thinkprogress.org and watch the Fox 2 report. And you have to ask yourself how the CEO of Cigna can stand to close his eyes at night and open them the next morning, knowing what he does to children like Madison Leuchtman. Here's a hint. It's called the banality of evil. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Well, hey, Cassie.
How are you?
Doing good. How about you?
Good. Good. So, I wanted to call in because I am leaving town tomorrow. I'm going to the East Coast. And I just wanted to tell everybody that I'm going to be on the East Coast for a week visiting colleges, and that some of the colleges that are kind of recruiting me and talking to me and trying to get me to set up a time to come visit are some pretty cool colleges.
cool? Such as? Such as?
Such as Yale and William & Mary. And I am going to see Princeton. I am going to see Skidmore. And I'm going to see Vassar. And it's going to be a really cool trip.
Oh, I think it will be, and I can't say that any of those schools in there are not more than meet your needs.
Yeah.
We're holding out for Yale, however.
We are? I thought we were holding out for Princeton.
Well, now that you've gotten the invite from Yale, you know, Bula Bula, go.
George Bush went to Yale. I need to find...
Yeah, but so did John Kerry.
Yeah.
So did Al Gore.
Okay.
You know, every institution is flawed. I mean, that's why the Amish build a flaw into every barn, because nothing's perfect. When the Amish build a barn, even if it looks like it's been perfect, they'll make sure that somebody bends a nail. Do they use nails? I don't know. But they'll put a flaw, because, you know, perfection is an affront unto the deity or whatever it is that they believe. But Princeton would be good. That's little Jimmy Madison's college, and Aaron Burr's.
Uh huh.
Yale would be wonderful. But you know what? Vassar isn't exactly the draw spunky school of higher education. So. Yeah, and John Fox says, I keep harping on Princeton. It's in Jersey.
Well,
he wants you to go to Jersey. I want you to go to Connecticut.
Okay.
Just because you get to do the Bugs Bunny thing and say, Connecticut.
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 Yes.
So it's not going to even be all that cold there, but I'm bringing lots of...
Oh, come on. You're leaving Austin, Cassie. We know you're taking a parka and mucklucks, all right? We know how you are about the North. Don't pull our legs.
A friend of mine, her family has a condo in Colorado, and she has all of this, like, serious winter stuff that she's loaning me. Just for the week.
Well, it's like the story that Mark Twain used to tell. And we'll apply it to Connecticut. But he said he knew a lady in Connecticut who was moving to Missouri. And as the house had been emptied out, she walked around the house, and she walked into the kitchen and said, "Goodbye, kitchen. I'm moving to Missouri." And she walked into the parlor, and she said, "Goodbye, parlor. I'm moving to Missouri." She walked into her old bedroom and said, "Goodbye, bedroom. I'm moving to Missouri." And then she walked outside and looked up at the sky and said, "Goodbye, God. I'm moving to Missouri." And Mark Twain, being a Missourian, said people misunderstood what she was saying. What she really meant was, "Good. By God, I'm moving to Missouri." And so that's what you can do. You can look up at the sky and say, "Good. By God, I'm moving to Connecticut."
Well, I'm moving somewhere. We're just not sure where. But... I should have a better idea in a week. So.
Do you know what the acceptance turnaround times are?
Officially, I won't hear anything until after the first of the year. I won't know anything until after the first.
Okay. But.
But hopefully, I'll get a good sense when I'm there. I don't know.
You know what? I just think that there is a wave of goodness and decency that is propelling you forward, Cassie. That will whether it's Skidmore or Strathmore or Bowdoin or Oberlin or Benoit or Yale, Williams, whatever. You will be propelled forward into a place that will make doors fairly swing open for you. Because within the grand scope of the universe, it kind of has to.
I hope so. Speaking of doors opening,
mm-hmm.
I can't believe that insurance company won't open the little girl's ears.
But see, there's some claims processor there that'll get an extra $62.13 on his or her Christmas bonus if she just makes sure that the little deaf girl stays deaf.
I don't understand that. I don't that's why we need to not have private health care. Bob?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. That's why we need to not have private health care. That's why we need to have it not be for profit that makes the decisions about these things. Because anybody who isn't looking just at money would say that this little girl should have her operation.
Yes. And you know, within the scope of stress that we were talking about, Cassie, Dr. Scott made clear that stress can be beneficial. There's good and there's bad. But if you're little Madison Leuchtman's mama or daddy, every denial that you get and every day you draw closer to Madison's seventh birthday, that's stress that you don't need. That's stress that is imposed from without that is not beneficial. And
no, that can't help them, and it can't help her, and it can't help them.
Well, you know, I mean, Cassie, you know where I come from. And around where I come from, the life story of Helen Keller is as close to a religious iconography as a fundamentalist state will allow it to be.
Uh-huh.
And when you the so-called miracle, but it, you know, and Ann Sullivan was referred to as the miracle worker. It wasn't a miracle. It was the fruit of absolutely dogged determination and hard work and never giving up and not letting the universe and not taking no for an answer from the universe. But you know, calling young Helen back from the darkness. And finding out what an astonishing human being resided within that challenged body. Do you realize that Cigna Insurance would tell Captain Keller that it was that he just needed to keep her deaf, mute, and blind and deal with it, and we wouldn't have a First Lady of courage in this country? God Almighty, you're right.
And I'm sure that Alabama wouldn't want to pay for her to have a teacher.
Oh no, that was, and of course that was all on Captain Keller's hook, and he was lucky enough to fortunate enough to have the money to hire Annie Sullivan via Alexander Graham Bell's reference, and bring her there to Tuscumbia. Heaven only knows how many other people didn't have those advantages. But, you know, she opened doors because she, up until Helen Keller, roughly, it had been just assumed that people who were deaf or mute or deaf, mute, and blind, as Helen was, were worthless as human beings on the planet. And as a result of Helen Keller, you get schools for the blind and schools for the deaf. And
both here. We actually, I know a family that moved here because, like, they picked Boston to move to because of the school for the deaf. Like, they, you know, the father who was looking for a job took, you know, chose the job here.
Yes.
Because of that.
Because there's an opportunity for a world to open up.
Yeah.
And you know, when you see little Madison on that news report, and she's there in that, you know, the typical, what looks to be the typical, you know, little girl blue sailor dress, and she's just an adorable little 6-year-old. There's no such thing as a 6-year-old girl who isn't adorable. I mean, they're just precious, the same way that little 6-year-old boys are rough and tumble or whatever it is that they are. 6-year-olds are precious because the world is blossoming for them then.
Mm-hmm.
And to simply pluck that blossom and declare that it isn't of sufficient worth to merit $20,000 for-profit avarice-driven insurance dollars is the very working definition of sin, if you ask me.
I think I agree with you. I think the fact that we don't do it for her, and we probably don't do it for children without insurance either.
Right.
Makes the whole country simple. And it makes all of the people who don't want, all the people who aren't liberal, all the people who don't want to have health care for everybody, like real health care, not just insurance that's going to say no, but real health care. I think it makes all of them sinning. They're awesome, you know.
Yes. So let me, obviously these sort of stories touch you. How do you approach them, Cassie, from the standpoint of where you are? Because how I approach something is different at the tender age of 46 versus you with the world somewhat newer before your own eyes.
Well, I haven't. You mean how do I approach them in terms of writing, or how do I approach them in thinking?
Well, both. Whichever suits you to address first.
Well, I haven't actually done any writing at all about the healthcare debate, or very little. And I don't know. I've been more focused on other things and on other. I've been focused on other kinds of writing, much more than the healthcare debate. But I do think, I think that we're a very mean country when it comes to the way we treat people, the way we treat everyone. You know, I think that it's not just the person who's the CEO of Cigna who's selfish. I think that all of the people who say, but I like my health insurance, I'm not going to vote to have anyone else have health insurance. I think that they're all selfish. I think all of the people that go to the teabagger rallies and, you know.
Well, but that particular crowd, they're not just selfish. They are self-deluded because.
Right. And they're stupid, but that's a whole different problem.
Well, okay.
Well, because they think that it's not going to ever happen to their family or them. Like, okay, so you have a good job and you have health care. You know, what happens when your kid graduates high school or college? What happens when, you know, your sister loses her job? What happens when, you know, somebody, like, they're so small. They're so self-focused. They can't think of anyone outside. And I think that says something really bad about our country.
Okay, next question. Next question, is it curable?
I hope so. Yeah, I mean, it has to be. But I think that until the media report actual reality about not just how many people went to teabagger rallies, but what universal health care really is, but until the media gets things right and until the churches stop getting, you know, flooded with this, what do they call it, where if you're rich, it's because you deserve to be rich?
Oh, the doctrine of election?
Yes. I think that until they get past that, and I don't know, with homeschooling and Fox News and people whose kids only the other kids at church, I don't know how we're going to get past it. But we have to get back to the values that the United States was founded on. And the United States was not founded on a for-profit value. I mean, there's nothing in the founding documents or in the writings of any of the founding fathers about that they kept slavery. So there was selfishness on behalf of white people. But there wasn't this, I don't know, it seems like it wasn't like this. And maybe it was. I mean, maybe excluding blacks and excluding Native Americans and excluding women, maybe all of that was their selfishness. I mean, maybe this is the same thing. But the people who were pro-slavery were never, they never had Fox News.
Can you imagine if they had?
I think the South would have won the Civil War. I mean, I think it would have been awful. I think it would still remain to this day.
Or you can argue that Fox News is trying to gin one up again.
Another Civil War?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that whole thing with the biblical references to killing Obama.
Yeah.
That's, they should all be tried for treason, including that Cafe Press. You should all be tried for treason. You're not allowed to say that. That's not political speech. That's the
no, word. No, but Cassie, wait, dear. It's not political speech. It's the most protected form of speech. It's religious speech.
But it's not.
Okay, convince me. How is it not?
It's not religious speech because, first of all, because you can't cherry pick verses from the Bible and apply them to today without looking at the whole context. First looking at the whole psalm and then looking at the whole context of, like, what happened when that psalm was written and what was going on and who was it directed to. I don't think that you can just cherry pick things out and then say.
But you recognize that within the structure.
I think that it's treason. I think even if it's protected, or even if it's religious, it crosses the line. It's not like they're saying, read the Book of Psalms, or live by the Psalms, or something that's not.
Let me see if I can go where I think you're going. It becomes non-religious speech when the verse in particular which existed within its own existential realm when it was initially written, when that verse is taken and directed at a particular individual, in this case, the President of the United States.
Yes, but even if it wasn't just the President, I think if they took that verse and had it be about the leader of Fox News, it would still be a threat. I don't think it's because it's the President. I think because it's the President, it's treason. But I think it would be wrong and it should be illegal, even if it's not about the President, even if it's about someone I don't like. So I'm not.
You're not cherry picking is what you're not being a hypocrite about it.
I'm trying not to, but there are too many people in this country who will look at that and go home and read it and then pick up a gun. I think it's dangerous, and I think it is a threat to the president, and I can't believe that the Secret Service is letting... I would hope the Secret Service wouldn't let people wear... You know, I didn't like Cindy Sheehan not being able to wear a T-shirt to rallies. But her T-shirt was about people who'd already died. It wasn't about tipping. I would hope that the Secret Service wouldn't let people who wear this T-shirt anywhere near President Obama. And I don't even think that they should be allowed to wear it. Just like we're not allowed to wear offensive shirts at school. So even though we have the right to free speech, you can wear whatever you want at your house. But when you come in school and you're around teachers and you're around other kids and you're around your principal, you can't wear anything that has swear words. And you can't wear anything that has a picture of a pot leaf. I know somebody who had a jacket, and the whole jacket, the decoration on the whole jacket, was marijuana leaves. And he got suspended for the day. And his shirt didn't tell anybody to go do anything illegal. It's just that was the picture on his whole sweatshirt.
And the reason given for all of those such rules is that we want to maintain order and peace and quiet and dignity within the scope of the classroom environment. Right?
Right. Well, at the whole school. You can't wear it even in the hallways.
Right. But, I mean,
There's some stuff you can do in the hallways that you can't do in the classroom. But you can't wear gang colors. You can't. There's all kinds of stuff that you can't wear. You can't wear halter tops unless you have a shirt on top. And that's a different problem. But that's, you know. But I guess the one I'm focusing on is the one that would offend people. So you can't wear swear words. So you could wear a shirt to school, probably, I think, that says, "I hate the president." But I don't think you could wear a shirt to school that says
the president.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know, I think I would hate it if, like, real life had the same stupid rules as high school, but I think that this is, I think that some of the stuff is dangerous. And I think that this is really, really dangerous.
But democracy is messy, Cassie. And it's the whole argument about the camel's nose under the tent. Because the theory being that once the camel's nose is under the tent, pretty soon he'll have the humps there too. Because it's hard to stop a camel.
Right.
And so if we ban that T-shirt, then we start coming up with a ban list. And that's something that the right wing is very much guilty of. A long time ago, one of those right wing groups that's forever trying to ban books, I may have mentioned this before, that because they wanted to get the sexy books out of the library, one of the books on their list was something called Making It in the Kitchen with Mary.
Uh-huh.
And because the right wing has a very dirty mind and the right wing doesn't look at the books to begin with, they decided it was a sexy book. Because it was Making It in the Kitchen with Mary. It was a cookbook.
Well, they're also stupid. But I already said that.
But they're notorious for doing that. The running theory of freedom of speech is that the remedy to bad speech is not to suppress the bad speech. The remedy to bad speech is more speech. The problem we run up against in this country, however, Cassie, is that the bad speech people have a complete stranglehold on the mass media in this country. You know, when you compare
That's where I started.
Right.
But it's not going to get better if the media doesn't tell the whole story. I don't think it can get better. And if people continue to homeschool, and if the church, you know, I don't want to tell the churches what they can and can't say.
You mean homeschooling, like where you teach the precious little darlings about back when we fought the Germans in the Mexican War and they bombed Pearl Harbor in 1848? That kind of homeschooling?
Yes. Yes. No, I mean, like, my friend Ava, who actually has called your show before.
Yes.
A long time ago. Do you know her? Do you
know who I know who you're talking about. I remember, yes.
Yeah. So Ava was homeschooled because the schools in her town didn't have a gifted and talented program at high school, and there weren't honors classes, and there weren't AP classes. So she was homeschooled for the last 3 years of high school. But not for religion.
Not by religious fundamentalists.
No. No, she was homeschooled so she could have all the AP classes. And, you know, like, that's... If she wasn't homeschooled because her parents thought the school was evil or was going to teach her that, you know, that all men created equal really means men and women and blacks and whites, they weren't afraid of that. They were afraid that she wouldn't learn enough to challenge her.
Which is reasonable.
And she wanted to homeschool. I mean, that was, you know, she wanted that.
Sure.
But she's at NYU, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she's in film school at NYU.
That's pretty prestigious.
Yeah, but she's going to be in Alabama the whole time that I'm in on the East Coast. We're going to mess each other up completely. Unfortunately, but.
What's she going to be doing in Alabama?
Having Thanksgiving.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
People are off next week.
Oh, sorry. Brain freeze. My bad. I'm a little dippy sometimes, Cassie. You know.
That's okay. Yeah.
And I haven't even started thinking about thawing out the turkey. I'm so behind the curve.
Wow.
But you've got that.
So I didn't mean like when I go there to go to school. I just mean she won't be there next week.
Right. You're going
Not
to wait.
I have any time in my schedule to see anybody, but.
Well, you will be a little bit busy. I trust you are flying.
Yes.
And let's see, you're getting, are you going to school tomorrow and then getting on the plane, or are you getting on the plane tomorrow morning?
My suitcase is packed. I'm going to school tomorrow, and then my host mom's mother is, my host mom was going to fly with me and do all of the touring stuff with me, but she can't because there's some family stuff going on here.
Right.
That she has to stay here for. So her mom is going to go with me. But for the New York and New Jersey part, Betsy's parents, we're going to actually stay at Betsy's parents' house.
Oh, wonderful.
And they're going to take us, they're going to let my host grandma rest for the two middle days, and they're going to take me to Lehigh and to Vassar and to Princeton.
Wow.
Yeah. So they're going to do that piece and let her kind of hang out and get her breath after going at Cassie pace for the first 2 days.
At Cassie pace. I like that.
Yeah. And then Thursday, we're going to be in, well, we're going to be in Connecticut by Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And I am the, Connecticut and New York border each other.
Yes, they do.
Right. Well, okay. I had to learn some more geography to plan this trip. I did not know my geography up there. So I'm in UU Youth, which is the Unitarian Universalist Youth Group.
Right.
And I'm an officer of our youth group here in Texas. So the youth group that's kind of part in New York, in one of the counties in New York, and then one of the counties in Connecticut, they are doing a big Thanksgiving dinner at the church, but they are doing, first, they're spending 4 hours at serving like the lunchtime Thanksgiving dinner
mm-hmm.
at a shelter.
Beautiful.
And then they're doing a youth group Thanksgiving dinner after that. And I'm going to go to that.
I think
so
that'll
I'm
be marvelous.
I'm going to get a chance to participate in all of that. And then I'm going to we're actually going to spend the night at the house of the girl who's the president of the Connecticut chapter.
Excellent. Well, as it turns out, I will be at a UU facility tomorrow.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, there is a press conference taking place at the UU church down in Charleston. And so I will be there tomorrow morning to provide, if nothing else, moral support as we talk about what's happening on Coal River Mountain.
Well, I'm glad the church is involved in ending
all that. The UU congregation in Charleston has been nothing if not magnificent in all of this.
I really like it. I mean, I know you get, you rag on all religion when you rag on fundamentalism sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But.
Oh, no, I've said on a number of occasions, if there was a UU fellowship around here, I'd be there every time the doors open. I have that much respect for it.
It's pretty cool. So, yeah, so all the details of the trip got changed. Well, details have been changing bit by bit. And it's really good that we're renting a car and not flying between all the places on the East Coast because we keep changing things. But the details changed about who was even traveling up there. Everything got changed this week. So.
These things happen. You're going to have a heck of a trip report to write.
Yes, sir.
Hey, it's your blog. Don't yes, sir, me, Cassie. It's your blog.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's what it's there for.
Yeah. And can I mention what I blogged about last week?
You certainly may.
So I called you on Tuesday to talk about the
Fort Hood Memorial, yes.
Yes, the Fort Hood Memorial that they did at school and how it came as a shock and how emotional and how really just how devastated I was with the whole thing, with the whole memorial. So I wrote an op-ed that I hope will be in my school paper. I've had it on my blog. It's actually been on 6 different blogs already. But I wrote an op-ed where I started out by saying that we've been at war for half of the time that I've been in school, over half of the, actually we've been at war over half of my life. We've been at war the entire time, basically the whole time since I've been in elementary school. And we've never had, we had Channel 1 in school and we have a CNN student report in school, but we have never heard about the veterans except on Veterans Day, and we've never seen war memorials, and we've never seen a casket, and we've never seen any of that, and we've never seen people who've lost their limbs, and we've never seen, they like just skip all of that until last Tuesday when we saw the memorial. And I compared it to how Bill Clinton and George Bush and Barack Obama have all given addresses to the students all over the country, and that we've always seen clips of them, and it was never a controversy until this year when it was President Obama. And I talked about how the school the whole country made such a stupid big deal. I didn't say stupid, but made it such a big deal about Obama's education speech, and everybody needed to see it ahead of time, and then we were supposed to watch it in school, and then they changed their mind because parents protested, and then,
Right, because they weren't sure that he wasn't in the space of that short speech going to turn all of their children into international singing socialists.
Right, in 15 minutes.
Right. If you're really good, you can turn somebody into a socialist in 15 minutes. Absolutely. I mean, Helen Keller was a socialist.
I haven't done it yet. I haven't turned anyone into a socialist, but that they didn't send anything to parents and that there was no warning or parental permission for this religious service and for the president and the reverend asking remarks from a president and from ministers. So anyway, so I've gotten really good comments on it, and it's been up in a lot of places.
Well, if you don't mind my mentioning it, there's kind of a follow-up to what you're talking about, Cassie. And it's a sad follow-up. There are new numbers out that have been confirmed by the Department of Defense. Just ran across this today. I found this over at veteransforcommonsense.org. It turns out that suicides among veterans and soldiers have reached a record high this year and are set to continue rising. And that was confirmed on Tuesday. As of November the 16th, 2009, 140 soldiers on active duty had taken their own lives. 71 soldiers not on active duty whose death has also been identified as a suicide. The suicide rate for 2008 was the worst in three decades. In January 2009, 24 soldiers killed themselves. Just in January 2009, more than died in combat in Iraq and Afghanistan combined that month.
I wish I could be surprised.
But you live in reality world, and therefore, Cassie, it isn't surprising.
It's not. It's not surprising. When I met with my assistant principal last week to talk about the memorial service and my objections to it and how it made me feel, one of the things that she said is that we hadn't shown any of the memorial services for the Fort Hood soldiers that committed suicide because we don't want to glorify suicide. And it's like, people in my high school are aware of suicide. We have two people kill themselves in my, not at school, but two students from my school in the 4 years that we've been in high school, we've had two people, not in our grade, but we've had two people who've been students of my school kill themselves. We're not strangers to suicide. But she said that if they showed us that, that would glorify suicide. I'm like, well, what about the combat death?
What kind of an answer did she have for that?
She changed the subject.
Punt! Yeah. That's just sad, Cassie. She couldn't. There you are, a young adult, and you apparently were not worthy of a young adult of the response that an adult would get. But that's one of the problems with the right wing is they don't do adult very well.
No.
They want to live in a make believe world where everybody's mother is June Cleaver and everybody's father is Ward Cleaver and it's all Lily White and
if you're not, it's your own fault.
And if you're not, it's your own fault. Yes, don't forget that. It's a matter of, you know, God made you this way because God likes you better than some other people.
And they'll only protect you and love you before you're born.
Don't forget that.
Or if you're...
Because if you're 6 years old and you need auditory implants, well, the Right to Life movement just isn't there for you. You've got a life, and that's enough. Who cares if you can hear? Or speak.
They don't even, that's not even enough because people who get a diagnosis that if you don't get treatment for this cancer, you're going to die, they can't just go to the emergency room and say, hey, I don't have insurance, but I have cancer, so treat me.
That's another one of the big right-wing lies is that, anybody in this country can have health care. All I got to do is go to the emergency room.
Well,
one of the reasons that our emergency rooms are so overburdened is because
they ask you for your insurance card.
Right. And the minute you don't have one, the law says all they have to do is stabilize you and then back on the street. And under those circumstances, the definition of stable becomes very fluid.
Yeah, there was a picture of a woman who still had an IV in her arm, wearing a hospital gown, getting out of a taxi cab because the hospital put her out and told her to go home.
Yeah, that's called patient dumping. It's evil.
It's because of profit. Profit shouldn't be in healthcare. If profit wasn't in healthcare, they wouldn't do the patient dumping.
If we had universal single-payer healthcare, there would be no need for patient dumping.
Right.
Because they'd be getting paid. It's really much simpler than it has been laid out to be, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. Did you hear that the guy, one of the doctors who's been on Fox News as an expert and telling everybody how single payer will cause people to lose their insurance and, you know, that the government-run healthcare is the worst thing ever? He is the same one that was sending the pictures of Obama with the bone through his nose.
Oh, no, I didn't. You're kidding.
It's the same doctor. No, I'm sorry. It's his partner. It's his partner.
The poison nut falleth not far from the poison tree, does it?
Right. It's partner.
I wish I was, well, like you said, I wish I was surprised. I wish I was amazed. But I'm not. I've lost it. Mostly I've lost the ability to be shocked by the right wing anymore. I expect them to be eliminationist. I expect them to live in a murderous frenzy. And sadly, they behave true to form almost every time. Cassie, travel well, dear. We will be thinking of you.
Good talking to you.
Good talking to you. And remember, make a good impression.
Yes.
We know you will. Don't stress.
Okay.
All right. See you, Cassie.
Bye.
Bye. The world is opening for Cassie. It is about 29 minutes before the hour. If you want to get in on the conversation, feel free to jump in. Juanita said she was sorry about the disconnect, but she said to tell Sue Godspeed. So, Sue, Godspeed from Juanita. Speaking of the avarice-driven healthcare insurance industry, you want a little hypocrisy update? I got one. You remember those death panels that the right wing was having such a purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy about? You know, kittens with crocheted tails? That was end-of-life counseling was what that was. The simple act of making people aware of living wills, medical powers of attorney, that kind of thing. And remember those were going to be death panels, government death panels. You remember the hysteria when all the while the death panels were in full toxic blossom inside the claims department of every single profit-driven insurance company in this country, which means all of them. Well, like I said, hypocrisy alert. It turns out that Cigna, whom we mentioned just a little bit ago, in their single-minded determination to make sure that a beautiful little child who is hearing impaired stays that way, Cigna urges people to contemplate end-of-life services. Cigna even has an entire web page that says care at the end of life. Things like how to talk with loved ones about end-of-life choices, whether to stop prolonging treatment. Their FAQ, learning about end-of-life care, what kinds of care are available at the end of life, what is hospice, how can I be sure my doctors will respect my wishes as I approach death, do I need a living will, what is the dying process like, will I be in pain? Then getting treatment. Where should I receive treatment? Should I receive artificial hydration and nutrition? Should I receive CPR and mechanical ventilation? Should I stop kidney dialysis? Should I stop receiving life-prolonging treatment? Cigna is, among others, a provider of health care to the Republican National Committee. And the fact of the matter is these are private decisions that are best addressed in advance because they are hell on earth to address in extremis. But there is nothing that the right wing will not turn into something gruesome and macabre if they but have the opportunity so to do, when they themselves are engaged in that about which they actively complain. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
But, and you forgot to mention that until recently they provided the female staffers abortion service.
They most assuredly did.
Hi, Bob. This is Marty. How are you doing?
Hey, Marty. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, it's one of those rare times. I'm actually, you know, it's like late night meeting on campus and nobody else is here, so I feel comfortable calling.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. I thought maybe you were playing hooky.
No, I've been listening. I just, usually I have to miss the last hour because that's the trip home.
Right.
And all, but like, gee, I'm feeling the pressure. I'm following one of Cassie's calls. Oh, man. How I envy that girl. And I see she's in the chat room. Still with me?
Yeah, I'm right here. Yeah, she's in the chat room.
I mean, as you have said,
and there are you.
The world is just out in the open. I hope she doesn't go to Yale.
Oh.
I mean, yes, there have been good people who have come out of Yale, but you know, you got some real black marks that come out of.
Well, but George W. Bush is enough for. I mean, that would have been enough to sort of start unbricking the mortar, as far as I'm concerned. But you know,
Oh, good point. Well, if you haven't heard, the Regents, the University of California, have voted. So, Cassie State, don't come to UC, even though I wanted you to, because I wanted to meet you. They have voted to raise, well, we call them reg fees, not tuition here. For in-state people, more than 32% starting in the spring.
Whew. That's a jump.
And Cassie, Marty is Shepherd Book. Because she just asked who.
Mm-hmm.
Who am I?
But what does that mean in real world numbers for a UCLA or a Cal or a Cal Irvine or San Luis Obispo or something like that?
Well, San Luis Obispo is part of the Cal State University system.
Oh, okay.
Not University of California, but, you know, your undergraduate tuition, your undergraduate, and I believe the quarter may now be, and this is on a quarterly basis only, so I think, reg fees may have just gone up. Let's just say we're starting to approach Ivy League. If I am correct.
And not to be unfair or anything, is it approaching Ivy League quality of instruction?
Oh, no.
Okay, just checking.
Because along with these increases, you're cutting services. And
So this is grand institutional water treading, in other words, right?
Yeah, it is. They oh man, not even that. I mean, because you've got now, and of course this partly affects me. Is, you know, you've got the, you know, they're furloughing people. I mean, not just within. I mean, and I won't go into how the University of California is different from the rest of the state of California, but we are basically our own separate entity. Though we get some money from the state. That's what the regents base everything on, is what they get from the state, and everything else be damned. What's actually funny is from where Texas Betsy and Cassie actually are, we got our current system president from there, Mark Udoff.
And from the UT system?
Yeah, I believe Udoff, and if Betsy is in the chat room, I can't tell because my garage is stuck.
No, she's not.
But my father, who's lived in the Cypress area north of Houston, has followed Udoff. Learned up a bit about Udoff and what he had done to the University of Texas in Austin, that same place that gave, among other things, to Vince Young, that he basically made the University of Texas expensive to attend as well, locking out a lot of otherwise qualified students on the account on a financial basis. And so we brought him over to UC, paid him more money, and he's doing for UC what he did for the University of Texas. Damn, isn't that great?
And, you know, did they not expect that? I mean, or was he brought there because of that?
If you want my honest opinion, I think they probably did it because of that. Because, you know, I don't think many of us knew Udoff's record when he came over here. I think all we knew was how much he was getting at University of Texas, and what the previous University of California president got before, and realizing there's a $300,000 difference in the fact that there's no state income tax in Texas and there is in California. Okay, why is he coming here? And then we saw, and then we got a gander at his compensation package. And it's like, okay.
Yeah, question answered. Texas Betsy is not in the chat room, but she is listening. And she just emailed to say, I know Udoff and his wife, good people, at least in my experience. Yes, they were in Austin for a while. And then she said, the state board sets the tuition rates here, not the university president.
Oh. That's how sexy, but I stand corrected.
And then meanwhile, Sandra...
At least my father stands corrected. Yeah.
And then Sandra also responds, what it means in California is privatization and education only for the rich.
Pretty much so, yeah, and I think Sandra would be a lot more educated on this. I don't know which level she's teaching at. She's teaching with University of California or Cal State or the community colleges. But, you know, the community colleges are just tremendously expensive now to go to. So they keep talking about, you know, if you lose your job, go in, or if you want to get a better job, go back to community college for training, and then you find, you know, they have two levels of fees. One if you have that first level college degree, the bachelor's degree, and one if you don't, and the one if you don't is much lower than the one if you do. which is why I'm sitting here now and not on my way to community college for whatever class I want to take to get up to the next level that I want to get to.
Wow. I guess this is a bit of a simplistic question, Marty, but is there an end in sight?
No, because there's because the tax collection in the state has slowed down from where they thought it would be, and so they're projecting another $20 billion deficit that they're going to want to cut.
And isn't this all more or less? Isn't the situation permanently perpetuated, Marty, by virtue of the one of those god-awful propositions that was passed years back that basically hogties state government forevermore where taxation is concerned?
13?
Yeah.
Yes, it did. Because, to sort of go over briefly the level 13, what 13 did, 13 locked property tax values at the 1978 property tax level, no matter what the value of the house, the value of the property went. So you've got people who are buying newer houses that might be smaller houses than an older house that haven't changed hands, but yet they're paying two, three times as much on property taxes. But, of course, with this helps, quote-unquote, business, is that you create a holding company for a piece of property, and then when you sell the business, you sell also the holding company, the property doesn't change hands, and so the property tax rate stays the same. And
that ignores inflation, that ignores the population growth. In other words, didn't 13 ultimately set California up to be somewhere in the future essentially a pauper state?
I would believe it pretty well did, and it passed about 6 months before I was eligible to vote. So people go, how did I vote on 13? I said, I didn't vote on 13, so they said, don't complain. They said, well, you see, I wasn't eligible to vote until later that year. So I didn't get the vote on it. But I think then another thing that Prop 13 did was it put in the requirement that in order to pass the budget in the legislature, you have to have a two-thirds supermajority.
Right, which thereby makes it all but impossible.
All but impossible unless you want a cow town. So in a way, what I see, and, you know, when next time Sandra calls, I'll be interested to see if she agrees. What we see now in Washington without a Cowtown and Republicans, actually got to start here in California. Because we would have strong Democratic majorities, but we didn't have the two-thirds majority in order to pass a bill, in order to pass a tax, or pass a budget, and so therefore the budget gets held hostage by whatever minority wants to hold it hostage for whatever reason. Because one of the things I do believe got taken out of a budget deal that even Allman agreed to, I believe, was a oil extraction tax. Not a tax, but a fee on oil extracted in the state. You know, it's in every state of the country. It's even in Alaska. That's how that annual check Alaskans get from the oil production gets sent. But we couldn't have it in California. We just could not put that burden on the oil companies. It's so funny.
And so ultimately, one may argue that this. Never mind New Hampshire or anybody. As California goes, so goes the nation. And to the extent that, financially speaking, California is eventually going to slide into the ocean, so too will we all.
I want to say yes, and then I'm reading, two of the major candidates for office, coming up for office on the Republican side, Meg Whitman, who's running for governor, who...
And she's just crazier than a sprayed roach, right? I mean, isn't she?
And this is the one who damn near ran...
Yeah, she ran HP into the ground, right?
No, that was Carly Fiorina.
Okay, sorry, my bad.
Who's after Boxer's seat, who, as CEO of HP, led the outsourcing of a whole bunch of jobs from the U.S. over to China, while saying that there, something like the employer, gainful employment is no longer a right to American. American workers have to compete with their lower paid brethren. So if they want the job, they have to be willing to work for less. That's Carly. Meg Whitman damn near ran eBay into the
Meg company. Whitman's eBay. Okay, that's what I, yeah.
Yeah, and, How do you nearly run eBay into the ground?
You got to be trying real hard.
I mean, eBay sounds like the most perfect thing over the web, or over the internet. I mean, I know there.
Yeah, it's a license to print money.
The series of tubes, as they like to call it.
It's not a big truck.
Yeah, not a big truck. Yeah, not the space shuttle. I don't know. anyway, there's probably somebody else who wants to talk, and I will hop off. And
well, it's very good to hear you, especially because it is so rare, and I enjoy our conversations, Marty. And I understand why usually you have to work by email, and they're always well received because 9 times out of 10, you're working the same wavelength I am. Just as a matter of curiosity. Has there been any follow-up on the Tim Lincecum bust?
He signed a deal to plead guilty on it to a lesser charge. The judge said before he would agree to it, Lincecum had to appear in court next month, which is probably because he wants Lincecum's autograph. And you do know that Lincecum won his second Cy Young Award.
Who else could have?
I think the two guys from the Cardinals could have won it. I would have voted for them, but diving off into sports, if anybody helped keep the Giants turnaround this year, it was Lincecum, and if you're going into that and going under that criteria, then okay, yes, he deserves to play on the award. So, anyway. Have you ever been able to try to contact Dave Zirin by any chance?
I have set out to do that a couple of times, Marty, but I am constantly beset by the Bob equivalent of Coleridge's person from Porlock. My life isn't a series of events so much as a series of interruptions. But it is
like the Lemony Snicket story.
Well, yeah, and so it is something that's on the list, and I hope to I'd love to establish some sort of a relationship with him because I checked him out, and you're absolutely right.
Because those of us who enjoy hearing about sports would get our fill, but those in the chat room who is not really sports fan. He has enough social commentary in his show and in his columns and that it's good for the soul as well.
Well, exactly. And I was having an email conversation with our buddy David from Tennessee, and we were talking about the fact that, it's not just box scores and who won and in how much time and what the yardage was or the ERA or what. Yeah, there's a backstory there that is fascinating from a human events perspective, and fascinating for the because like it or not, and I know there are a lot of people who will disagree with me, but sport is baseball and football primarily are our national metaphor.
Well, sometime when I call and I feel a little less nervous than I do now. An interesting topic that Dave Zirin has spoken on is this increased nationalization within professional sports, professionally. If it's not the theater, if it's not the, I'm trying to say theocracy, but it's not coming out right. You know, the increasing appeals to religion in sports and...
Oh, and war. You know, you can't have a football game anymore without wasting about 1 million gallons of jet fuel flying some fighter jets that until recently were dropping bombs on brown people over the game.
Exactly. Oh, man, I just remember a couple of times at ball games. This is before we had, Bill Clinton was still president, and still have the fighter jets fly over and the stadiums on opening day. And it's like, yeah, I definitely, it's definitely adrenaline pumping to have the thing fly over with afterburners going. Near the San Francisco Hills at Candlestick Park is really entertaining because you keep wondering, will the F-16 actually pull away from the mountain in time? But it's like, one, you're wasting the damn jet fuel, and two, isn't there something better they can do with the taxpayers' money than fly over stadiums on opening day?
But you've got to promote that. I mean, this is when you start talking about rampant nationalism and rampant corporatism. We know the word for that, don't we, Marty?
And then when you go to the NFL website to follow a game, the first thing that comes up with you to get a commercial for Walmart, as you spoke about, yesterday, is a commercial for Walmart about everything. It comes on almost every bloody break. It's like I'm trying to find channels that don't have commercials so I can avoid them. Or you get a thing for the Marines. Yes, that is how they recruit more soldiers. And then I read on, was it you? I think somebody here read it. Was it on the way talking about military recruiters going into kindergarten classrooms?
Oh, that wasn't me, but that certainly doesn't surprise me. I mean,
but the funny thing is, I don't know if you've seen the movie version of Heinlein Starship Troopers.
I have.
I'd like it if you did. Means
citizenship.
But that too. But I'm thinking of the commercial break that they had where the soldiers are at the school and they're handing out they're giving the kids the rifles and stuff and how to hold it and giving the kid bullet shells to play with. And that's what story felt like. I'm certain Heinlein shaking his head and said, don't you know the thing is satirical?
Well, I mean, he had some ugly libertarian leanings. That's all made manifest most sort of in your face with the moon as a harsh mistress. But he also had a healthy respect for science. And the two, at some point, the two diverge, and I always got the sense that where they did diverge, that Heinlein would land squarely with science.
Agreed.
So, and frankly, the difference between that god-awful movie that was an excuse for a full-frontal nudity scene for what was her name, and the book are enough that, once again, the book wins.
The funny thing about that was they actually got the title. They had written the screenplay about basically bugs, man at war with bugs, and I guess the legal department said, this is too much like Starship Troopers, and then they went and asked and inquired about the rights of Starship Troopers, how they were available and got them, and so that's how it got to be.
I'll be darned. I didn't know that. I didn't know that at all.
Yeah, that's that weird origin. And the funny thing about it was, if you divorce it from Heinlein and realize where Paul Verhoeven, the director, came from, Poland at the time of the invasion, at the time Poland was occupied by
the Soviet Union, yeah.
Not the Soviet Union, by Germany.
Oh, but I didn't really, yeah, he is that old, isn't he?
Yeah, he is that old. It comes out as the perfect, and the fact that the Earth, like you said, service guarantee citizenship. It's a World War II movie in space, basically.
Yeah.
And if you got that and dropped the Heinlein thing and forgot it from the supposedly from the story by Heinlein, you could actually enjoy the movie.
And it makes a lot more sense.
Because somebody said, why didn't? Because a friend of mine said, well, why didn't they use lasers for the go after these things in the future? I said, it's a World War II movie in space. That's why they.
Yeah.
That's why they.
Well, that's like, I mean, I'm really waiting for the screen treatment to come out for The Moon is a Harsh Mistress now that we've identified ice on the moon. Because that was the sine qua non of the whole scenario that he came up with for that. Hey, Marty, this has been lovely, but I got a roll. We're right up against it.
That's right. Got to get ready for Moy.
All right.
Yeah, fun talking to you, Bob.
All right. Take care, Marty.
All right. You too.
Bye now.
Bye.
Okie dokie, we're over time. It is time for Molloy. Enjoy and join me here tomorrow evening for Friday on the Front Porch. We will have a darn fine rock and ruckus of a good time. And remember, please, this all happens because of your continued financial support. I'm afraid we're going to get to November and not even be halfway to what we needed for November, and we're going to be into December. I'm sorry. I don't mean to play this too hard. I try really, really hard not to. But we need your continued support. The PayPal button works, and so does the snail mail address. Feel free. Whatever you can share, if you can share it, do not damage yourself. And do not put yourself to any hard ends. But we do need your help. Thanks to John Fox, Peter Godbold, Ben Birch. Thanks to the chat room moderators. Thanks to Sue. Thanks to the News Ninjas. Welcome home, Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
Hey, welcome to Thursday, a minute past the hour, and I think we've already got a working theme for this evening. We'll be having a conversation here in about 30 minutes with Dr. Carol Scott. She is an author. She is also the head of emergency medicine in the ER department at the military hospital at Fort Belvoir, Virginia. And she has a new book out. The name of the book is Optimal Stress. Optimal Stress. It comes out from Wiley Publishers. It is just now out. It's been out for about 3 days. And she is an expert on the connection between stress and disease, heart attack, stroke. And she teaches about how to turn the negatives that are the stresses in our lives into positives. So with that in mind, I think we will have quite an interesting conversation coming up. Also in the news, of course, the new guidelines. The new guidelines for breast cancer detection, causing no small amount of a furor out there. Recent recommendations to drastically modify mammography screening. Women between the ages of 40 and 49 are supposed to forego screening because it's apparently, at least in terms of the scientific numbers, of no use. And women between the ages of 50 and 74 should have mammograms every other year instead of every year. And there just shouldn't be any breast cancer screening for women older than 74. I have to say that I am of two minds on this. You know that I have a healthy respect for science and for research. But this is not the time, frankly. And I know that there is no such thing as the right time for facts or the right time for reason or the right time for science. It's always the right time for science. But God Almighty, could this have come at a worse time? Because already Senator Tom Coburn is out there howling. Howling is what Tom Coburns do best. About how women who have reconstructive surgery after breast cancer will pay a 5% cosmetic surgery tax. Now, you and I both know that this is untrue. You and I both know that there is a difference between having your B's blown up to double D's and having one side of you, or both sides of you, reconstructed to look the way they did before the surgery. One is cosmetic, one is not. The radiology industry is highly upset about this. A number of people who have had lives saved or loved ones' lives saved are upset at this. But apparently the numbers indicate that neither breast self-examination nor the annual squishing, that's what Agnes calls it, the annual squishing, does much in the way of saving lives. But worst of all out of this is the fact that you know that this is going to give fodder to the death panels, the real death panels, mind you, otherwise known as the boards of directors of the for-profit, avarice-driven healthcare industry. This is going to give them fodder for denying more coverage. And frankly, the information is beyond my real comprehension anyway. If we're not doing regular mammography between the ages of 40 and 50, then how are we detecting it? Is this an admission by medical science that even mammography doesn't really do the job? And frankly, what about women under 40? I understand that the statistics for breast cancer go down under 40, but there are such things as genetic predispositions. And are the rules different for someone who is genetically predisposed for breast cancer? I guess I'm a little bit sensitive to the issue just because of the fact that it touched my life when I was a child. bless her heart, my mother never let on that anything was untoward.